Or why don't we turn to Justice, We Turn to Love. It's page 534. But then the first edition is 497. This is the middle section in a trio of sections, all of which deal with the basic issue of the world's version of justice, which is one or the other, and that is that someone will lose so that I will gain. Right? And that, of course, is what happens when justice is split off from love. The section begins with a discussion of what is essentially the theme of our little willingness. What's important about this is that it should be obvious from reading the text that simply turning to the Holy Spirit and asking for his version of justice is not the easiest thing in the world to do, because our whole existence, once again, rests upon the idea that sacrifice is salvation. Indeed, sacrifice is existence, because our existence came into being at the moment when we sacrificed God so that our individual self would live. Right? So that by choosing Jesus as our teacher, asking for help that we perceive a situation differently, namely that we see everybody as the same, we're really asking for the undoing of the very self that we think is asking the question and asking for help. That's what makes this so difficult. As long as we identify with this false self that we call ourselves, accepting true forgiveness or true justice is impossible. Right? Which means that there has to be a way wherein we could slowly begin to disassociate or disidentify, that's a made-up word, I think, disidentify, with this self. What enables us to do that is asking for help, not that we change what we do, not that we change what we think, but that we at least ask for help to allow ourselves to step back and observe what we think and what we do. It's at that moment that the decision-making part of our mind that before chose the ego and then became the ego now becomes an observing self. When the decision maker is in his right mind, namely when he chooses the ego, excuse me, chooses the Holy Spirit, at that moment he becomes an observer. In fact, if you look on your chart, you'll see the word observer next to decision maker, or underneath next to dreamer. That what asking for help means, in the context of the process that the Course leads us through, is that we step back and we watch what our egos do. Being in the right mind, therefore, means operationally that we're in our wrong mind, but we're not judging ourselves for it. Right? It's this beginning shift that allows us to move from being an ego and identifying with this physical, psychological self that we think we are, to the part of our minds that now observes this psychological, physical self, hating, plotting, scheming, sacrificing, etc. That's what the whole process of healing is in the Course. And what brings that about is simply our little willingness to step back with Jesus, raising ourselves above the battleground, and then looking back down on the battleground of our lives, watching ourselves plot, scheme, manipulate, seduce, indulge our specialness, indulge our pain, hate, seemingly love, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the things that we're so accustomed to doing in this world. We're not asked, again, to change what we do or change our behavior or change our thinking. We're simply asked to watch what we do. And the more we could practice this, stepping back and observing our egos in action, which that's what it means to ask Jesus for help or to take his hand, the more we'll be able to break this identification with this false self. And as we identify less and less with this physical, psychological self, we'll be less and less fearful of the path that will eventually lead us beyond this self entirely. Right? This is all very, very important because it really is what helps us understand the essence of what it means to be gentle and to be kind. As authoritative as Jesus is in this Course about what is truth and what is illusion, at the same time, he never ceases to be being very gentle, very patient, and very kind. That gentle kindness and patience comes through every page, just as does the same authority that teaches us that we're not even here. And all that he asks from us is this little willingness to be able to step back with him and look at what our egos do. That's why looking at the ego is such a central aspect to the whole process of forgiveness. Right? One of my favorite lines is from the workbook and describes what the miracle does. And the statement is that the miracle looks on devastation and reminds the mind that what it sees is false. Nothing is said about choosing something different. Nothing is said about changing anything. It's all about looking at the devastation, first outside in the world, recognizing that the devastation outside is a mirror of the devastation of our wrong-minded thinking, and hearing this inner voice saying that what you are looking at is wrong. Right? There's no judgment inherent in that. There's no condemnation. There's no impetus to change. Right? There's no pressure on us to change. There's simply the gentle reminder that what we are seeing is all made up. Right? And part of that same process is learning to understand why we made it up. Namely, the whole idea of motivation or purpose for the world, that it become a place where we could keep our separate identity, split off the sin, project it out onto other people, thereby magically believing we are free from it. So that the little willingness is simply the willingness to take Jesus' hand, which means to share his vision, that we look at what our egos have us do, and that's all. Another favorite line is also from the workbook that says, forgiveness is still and quietly does nothing. It merely looks and waits and judges not. Once again, there's no implicit or explicit pressure on us to change. It's simply describing the process of quietly looking without judgment. So we look at our brother's egos and we look at our own ego. But we don't judge it. And the process of looking without judgment once again reflects the process of beginning to disengage from this ego self. Because the self that is looking at myself is no longer this self. The self that is looking at this self I call Ken is what we now refer to as the decision-making or observing self. It's the part of our mind that originally chose the ego over the Holy Spirit and now is making the attempt to reverse that mistaken choice. Okay, so that's what he's really speaking about here at the beginning of the section. The Holy Spirit can use all that you give to him for your salvation, but he cannot use what you withhold, for he cannot take it from you without your willingness. For if he did, you would believe he wrested it from you against your will. And so you would not learn it is your will to be without it. All right, this is a very important theme that's found throughout of the course. We saw it in chapter 2 where Jesus was specifically speaking to Helen originally, where he was telling her that she should not ask him to take her fear away. And he explains that if I did that, I'd be tampering with the basic law of cause and effect. And what I really would be doing would be denigrating the power of your mind. That fear is something we made up, and therefore we're the only ones who could undo it. And basically what Jesus says, instead of taking away your fear, ask me instead to remove the conditions that led to the fear. And the conditions always entailed a willingness to be separate. So by joining with Jesus, we are undoing our desire to be separate from him and from the truth. Right? And he further explained to Helen that if he did what she asked, right, he'd be undoing and going against the very basic message and purpose of this course, which is to reinstate in our awareness the power of our minds to choose. That's the only thing in the entire universe that could help us. Because that's the problem. And the purpose of Jesus or the Holy Spirit is not to make the choice for us, but to remind us, number one, that we have a mind, that what we see outside is a projection of the decision the mind made inside, and that this mind made the wrong choice. So along with Jesus, we look on the devastation that we have made, first as a thought system and then in the world, and then be reminded by him that what we are seeing is false. And it's false because all of it was a defense and still is a defense against the love of God, which is the truth. So he doesn't take it from us. He doesn't demand. As he says earlier of the Holy Spirit doesn't demand. He doesn't seek to overpower. He doesn't command. He simply reminds. That's what Jesus does. And when he says, a little after that in the text, that we should take him as our model for learning, one way of understanding that, which is not in the context of his original statement there, but one way of understanding that is to take him as our model in the sense of learning to be kind and gentle with each other. Not to command, not to demand, not to try to overwhelm by the sure presence of your stronger will or seemingly stronger wisdom or greater wisdom, but simply to be a loving reminder of the alternative, the other thought system in everyone's mind. Right? That's what's reflected here. Right? He doesn't want us to feel that he is demanding anything of us. If he demanded salvation of us, he'd be making salvation real. Salvation is not real. It's a correction for what is not real. We are saved literally from our false belief in the reality of guilt. That's what we're saved from. If he insisted that we do something that he thinks is best for us, he'd be having the same investment in insanity that we do. We'd have the insane investment in not doing something, and he'd have the insane investment in our doing something. He is not interested in our doing anything except learning to look at the ego without judgment. And when we truly learn how to do that, we would share in his gentle smile that looks at the silliness of believing there was ever anything other than the will of God. So on a very practical level, and this course aims at being very, very practical, all that we're asked to do is to step back and look at our egos in action. Look at how much we subscribe to the ego's view of justice. Look how quickly we choose up sides when we hear a news story. Look how quickly we ally ourselves with the victim against the victimizer. Or sometimes people ally themselves with the victimizer against the victim. But see how quickly we choose up sides and do not see or do not share the vision of the sonship as one. And all we're asked to do is to look at that. Not to change it. It's always the ego that wants to change something. If you want to change something, you're obviously making it real. You don't want to change anything except the eyes with which you're looking at your ego. And when you look through his eyes, again, what will eventually come is that gentle laughter. Simply smile sweetly and gently at the silliness of the thought system of the ego, however vicious it may seem to be. You need not give it to him wholly willingly. For if you could, you had no need of him. Or again, so Jesus is recognizing, which is why the passages like these are so important, and the Course is replete with them, that he wants us to know that he knows how terrified we are of joining with his thought system, how terrified we are of getting rid of letting go of our thought system. So he's telling us you don't have to let go of this totally, right? You don't even have to let go of a large part of it. All you have to do is let go of the resistance to once again looking at it with his loving, kind, and gentle eyes beside you. Just looking at the insanity of your ego thought system. Because it's only when you really begin to look at it that you will feel nauseated enough about it that you will be motivated to let it go. And then you will let it go. Not because he told you to, but because you told yourself to. Because you recognize how hateful and how painful your thought system was, not necessarily to others, but to yourself. And that would be the motivation of you letting it go. But this he needs, that you prefer he take it than that you keep it for yourself alone and recognize that what brings loss to no one, you would not know. This much is necessary to add to the idea no one can lose for you to gain, and nothing more. Again, all that he's asking us once again is to look at this thought system of one or the other, that I want to win at someone else's expense. Just look at that and realize that I don't know anything else. But the very fact that I'm willing to look at my investment in this thought system is all that he needs. That's the little willingness. And again, on a very practical level, what you want to do is day in and day out, just watch your mind for how quickly you fall into the trap of choosing up sides, of thinking that your happiness depends on you getting something from the outside. How your peace depends on your screening off something or someone that you perceive as harmful. Again, he's not asking us to change anything that we do. He's simply asking us to step back with him and look. And if you really practice that diligently, day in and day out, and the purpose of the workbook as a one-year training program is to begin the process of helping us learn to be this vigilant. And as we do this day in and day out, once again, we are gradually disengaging and separating ourselves from this ego body identification. And that's all you have to do. Because, again, the less involved and invested we are and identify we are with this body and this self, the less fearful his thought system will become to us. Because it's preserving this self that makes the Holy Spirit such an enemy, that makes Jesus such a threat, and makes this course such a curse. All of our resistance to it and to him comes from our fear of what he's saying, because of what the implications are for this self. But the less identified I am with the self, once again, the less threatened I'll be by a thought system that comes from outside of this system, of which I'm a part, and comes from a place outside the dream where real hope lies and real peace is found.